All right. Well, welcome to Hoboken Grace on this Christmas Sunday. We're super excited to have you with us, whether you're here in person or whether you're listening online at home, wherever that may be. For the last couple of weeks, we've been walking through this conversation, as the video said, called Overwhelming Christmas. And for most of the time, we've been talking about things that exist outside of us that can oftentimes overwhelm us in this time that we call Christmas. And I look at Christmas and I want to enjoy Christmas as much as I possibly can. And not just because I want to enjoy this time of year because I like holidays, but because I think that it's actually a meaningful moment in the celebration of who God is and what God's done for us. And so I want to enjoy it. And so we've been walking through this journey of looking at the things that oftentimes can keep us from experiencing it to its fullest, oftentimes can overwhelm us and stress us out rather than allowing us to experience it for what it is. And it's just a few days away. And so we've only got two conversations left. We've got today, and then we have our Christmas Eve conversation, and then Christmas is here. But as you guys know, Christmas is not just one day. It's spread out throughout weeks, right? And so some of you have already had family Christmases, and we're already in that mode and celebrating Christmas. And like I said, sometimes these things that overwhelm us, they come from outside. So we began and we looked at the event of Christmas and all the things that are happening around us. Then we talked about family and how we interact with family during Christmas. But then also along with that, there are certain things that come from inside of us that can overwhelm us as it pertains to Christmas. And I don't know what it is about Christmas. I don't know if it's the significance of Christmas and the fact that it seems to be the most prominent, most celebrated holiday, or if it's the timing of Christmas and the fact that it comes with the end of the year. But there's something about Christmas that, if you're like me, causes us to reflect. There's something about Christmas, and even the way that we celebrate it, even the way that we talk about it, there's something about it that causes us to reflect. And so when you see the commercials and talking about Christmas, there's all these images and videos of Christmases of the past. And we're looking back. And again, I don't know if it's because of the significance or the fact that it just comes so close to the end of the year, and there's something about the end of the year that causes us to look back. I'm not sure what it is, but I know this. There's something about Christmas that causes us to reflect. And so we look back. Now, for some of us, that's really good. For others of us, not so much. And so you look back on this past year, or you look back on the past couple years, and you look at where you'd hope that you'd be. You looked at who you'd hope that you'd be. You think back to last year's Christmas, and maybe some of the difficulty that you went through, or maybe some of the beauty of what you experienced, and you'd hope that this year would build on that, or you'd hope that this year you'd move away from that, or there's something about Christmas that causes us to reflect, to look back. And sometimes that's really good, because sometimes we look back and we realize, man, wow, look at what's happened this past year. Look at all the beautiful things that have come into my life. But then there are those other times when you look back and you're like, man, what happened? What happened? And you thought that you would be someone better. You thought that you would love better this year. You thought that you would be a better husband. You thought that you would be a better wife. You thought that you would be a better mom. You thought that you'd be a better friend. You thought that you'd be a better dad. But you come to this point and you look back, and for some of us, the overwhelming nature of Christmas is not something that happens outside of us, but something that happens within us. Because we look back and we realize that the dreams that we had, they didn't happen. and the things that we'd hoped for, they didn't happen. And in those moments, I think that that can either rob us of Christmas, or I believe it can help us to understand and celebrate even more what Christmas is all about. I want to show you what I'm talking about here. I want to take you to the book of Isaiah. And in the book of Isaiah, there's a prophet named Isaiah, ironically. And Isaiah's reflecting. He's looking back at the nation of Israel and their history. He's looking back at the way in which they've lived. He's looking back at the hopes and dreams that they've had, and realizing that those hopes and dreams have crumbled. And Isaiah's in this conversation with God about what that means and how this is going to play out. But the book itself is quite depressing. If you'd like to be depressed this Christmas, go back and read Isaiah. He's looking back and he's realizing that everything that they'd hoped for has really come to nothing. And everything that they wanted and everything that God said could be possible, they've pretty much destroyed all of it. They find themselves in this moment that for some of you is a very real thing, because as you walk into this Christmas, you know it's your moment. Now, maybe for others of you, you're not there this Christmas. You're celebrating this Christmas, but all of us know what it's like to be there. And I think the book of Isaiah has something unbelievably powerful to bring into your life and in my life that influences those moments, whether that moment be at Christmas or at some other point in the year. But specifically as it pertains to Christmas, because as Isaiah is in this moment and he's reflecting back and he's looking at all of the brokenness of the nation of Israel and the darkness in which they find themselves, and the fact that they hadn't been able to do better, and the fact that they weren't able to love the way that they'd hoped that they'd loved, and all the things that they had dreamed about had really come to nothing. And not because of someone else, but because of themselves. He's experiencing the full darkness of it. The ugliness of it, the weight of it, the overwhelming nature of it. Let me read to you just a couple lines of what he's experiencing and feeling. Isaiah 64, beginning in verse 5, it says, "You welcome those who gladly do good, who follow godly ways, but you have been very angry with us, for we are not godly, we are constant sinners. How can people like us be saved?" It's just almost complete depression. I mean, at the very bottom, he's looking back and realizing we have absolutely nothing. It's the epitome of, "I wish that I could have done better." It's the epitome of, "I was going to do this, but then I didn't." And in those moments, for most of us, the way that we deal with it is usually a couple different ways. Either one, we start to justify it. So we look back at the year before and we realize, well, yeah, but I mean, I encountered this circumstance and I didn't expect to encounter that circumstance, or this went wrong over here and this happened over here. So we begin to justify it and we try in some way, shape, or form to help ourselves to feel better about the fact that we failed, help ourselves to feel better about the fact that we didn't do what we wanted to do, that this year wasn't what we hoped that it would be, by looking at the circumstances around us or the people around us who also didn't live up to the expectations. And so we justify it. Or maybe rather than justifying it, we just compare. And so I understand that I wasn't the husband that I had hoped that I would be this past year, but I mean, look at him. I mean, at least I didn't do what he did. You know, I mean, at least I was still faithful. At least I was home at least one or two times to be able to see my kids at least. And we'll begin to compare it to those around us and in some way, shape, or form try to find a light at the end of the tunnel by comparing it. And we believe that that's going to help us to feel better. But the problem is, and I don't know, maybe it's just me, but it never works. I don't feel better. And for some of us, we just drown in it. And I know, based upon my past experience, that as we go into this Christmas, for some of you, you're going to look back on the hopes and dreams that you've had and how things have shattered this past year. And you are going to be unbelievably overwhelmed by it. I have conversations with people around this time of year, every single year, who are completely overwhelmed by the fact that they had hoped that it would be different, the fact that they had hoped that they would do better, but they just didn't. And then there are those of us who, rather than allowing it to just completely overwhelm us and to leave us debilitated, we just vow to do better. And so we're just going to do better. And this next year, it's going to be different. And we go into this next year the way that we went into this past year. But for some reason, we think that if we just try a little harder, if we can just muster up a little more strength than we did this past year, then it will be better. I think for most of us, it's usually one of these four ways that we use to, in some way, shape, or form, find a light at the end of the tunnel. We're in this moment and we're reflecting back and we're confronting the brokenness and the darkness. And we usually use one of these ways to find a light so that we don't become completely overwhelmed by it. But Isaiah doesn't. Isaiah doesn't justify it. He's in this moment, he's looking back. He's realizing just how bad it is. He's realizing that what they said they were going to do, they didn't do. He's realizing that it's all been destroyed and it seems like there's no hope. But he doesn't justify it. He doesn't say, but look what happened over here. And if this hadn't happened, then we wouldn't have done this. He doesn't begin to justify it and he doesn't begin to compare. He doesn't say, look at this other nation. At least we're better than them. Or look at this group of people over here. At least we did better than them. He doesn't begin to compare, at least not in the way that we typically compare. He does compare, but not in the way that you or I do. I'll take you to this passage where he compares. It's just a continuation of what we were talking about or what we were reading earlier. It says, "You welcome those who gladly do good, who follow godly ways, but you have been very angry with us, for we are not godly. We are constant sinners. How can people like us be saved?" And then he compares it. He says, "We are all infected and impure with sin. When we display our righteous deeds, they are nothing but filthy rags. Like autumn leaves, we wither and fall, and our sins sweep us away like the wind." He does compare. He says, listen, as I look at what we do and the way in which I've lived my life, I've begun to realize something about us. It's not just in our brokenness that we seem to fail, but even in the best of what we have to offer. It's just like a pile of filthy rags. Milius is going to hate me afterwards for doing this to the stage. My son Caden had so much fun doing this yesterday. We went to Home Depot and bought one of those big things of rags, and they're all beautiful white, and I handed them to him and turned him loose in our backyard with all the snow melting, right? So it's getting really muddy back there. And I said, "Caden, you have one job today. I said, I just want you to get these things as messed up and ugly and muddy as you possibly can." And he looked at me like, "Oh, you're lying to me." He really did. He's like, "What?" I was like, no, seriously, just go back there and you just get as muddy as you possibly can and just get those things as ugly as you can. He's like, can I ride over them with my bike? I said, you can do whatever you want to. And so he's out there layering dirt on them and just riding his bike back and forth over top of them. Isaiah's in this moment and he's reflecting and he's looking back and he's beginning to realize that it's not just in those years when it seems that everything's gone wrong, but it's even in those years where it seems like everything's gone right. When he looks at it for what it is, he's like, to be honest with you, it's like even the very best of what I have to offer, even when I give it everything that I have, even when I muster up all the strength and the willpower that I have, the best that I have, it's just this. And the light at the end of the tunnel for Isaiah is not that, well, the circumstances, if the circumstances were different, or yeah, but I mean, it's better than this other. The light at the end of the tunnel is not that, well, we're going to be able to do better. You see, there's something amazing about the book of Isaiah, because the book of Isaiah is constantly in this mode where it's doing two things at the very same time. It's looking back and it's looking forward. It's looking back and it's looking forward. It's looking back and it's looking forward. Throughout the entire book, over and over and over again, it's looking back and realizing that all the hopes and dreams that we had, it's just all of the effort that we could put in, it's nothing more than just filthy rags. But then at the same time, right alongside of it, it's just constantly not just looking back, but then also looking forward. You see, the amazing thing about Isaiah is that the light at the end of the tunnel for Isaiah is Christmas. And so throughout the book, he's constantly referring to it. Listen to how he begins chapter 64. Oh, that you would burst forth from the heavens and come down, how the mountains would quake in your presence as fire causes wood to burn and boil. And then even when you go back to Isaiah 53, he's talking about it over and over again. And the book of Isaiah is written years and years and years before Christmas ever gets there. But the light at the end of the tunnel in Isaiah is Christmas. Isaiah 53, who has believed our message? To whom has the Lord revealed his powerful arm? My servant grew up in the Lord's presence like a tender green shoot, like a root in dry ground. There was nothing beautiful or majestic about his appearance, nothing to attract us to him. He's talking about this day when finally someone was going to be born. And it's interesting too, because when you read through the book of Isaiah, it doesn't just talk about that there's going to be someone who comes to die for you. And this is really, really important for you to understand. And this is what I want for you to be able to grasp today as we celebrate Christmas. I think this is the message that changes those moments when we're overwhelmed by our inability to be able to do what we'd hoped that we could do. He doesn't just celebrate the fact that one day someone is going to come to die for you. He celebrates the fact that one day someone is going to come to live for you. And so he talks about how he's going to grow up, and he talks about how he's growing up before God and how he encounters all these things. It says there was nothing beautiful or majestic about his appearance, nothing to attract us to him. He was despised and rejected, a man of sorrows, acquainted with deepest grief. We turned our backs on him and looked the other way. He was despised and we did not care. He's talking about the difficult life that he's going to live and the things that he's going to encounter and experience and the pain that he's going to carry as he walks through this life. And as you continue in Isaiah 53, it's one of the most beautiful passages in Scripture, because not only does it talk about how he's going to live for you, but then it also does talk about how he's going to die for you. It says, yet it was our weakness he carried, it was our sorrows that weighed him down. And we thought his troubles were a punishment from God, a punishment for his own sins, but he was pierced for our rebellion, crushed for our sins. He was beaten so we could be whole. He was whipped so that we could be healed. All of us like sheep have strayed away. We have left God's path to follow our own. Yet the Lord laid on him the sins
of us all. He was oppressed and treated harshly, yet he never said a word. He was led like a lamb to the slaughter, and as a sheep is silent before the shearers, he did not open his mouth. Unjustly condemned, he was led away. No one cared that he died without descendants, that his life was cut short in midstream. But he was struck down for the rebellion of my people. He had done no wrong, and he had never deceived anyone. But he was buried like a criminal. He was put in a rich man's grave. But it was the Lord's good plan to crush him and cause him grief. Yet when his life is made an offering for sin, he will have many descendants. He will enjoy long life, and the Lord's good plan will prosper in his hands. When he sees all that is accomplished by his anguish, he will be satisfied. And because of his experience, my righteous servant will make it possible for many to be counted righteous. For he will bear their sins. I will give him the honors of a victorious soldier because he exposed himself to death. He was counted among the rebels. He bore the sins of many and interceded for rebels. Isaiah's in this moment and he's looking back and he's confronted with the fact that even the best of what I have to offer is just this. But there is a light at the end of the tunnel. The end of the tunnel is Christmas. That one day there will be a Christ. And that Christ is going to come. And not only is he going to die for you, but he is going to live for you. And he is going to, exactly what 2 Corinthians is trying to help us to understand in verse 5, verse 21. It says, "For he hath made him to be sin for us who knew no sin, that we might be made the righteousness of God in him." He says, he's going to come and he is going to live for you so that he can come to you and to me and to every single one of us and say, "Yeah, I see what you have there. But I'm going to live my life in a way that's different. I'm going to live my life, and I'm going to encounter everything that the world has to throw at me. I'm going to encounter all of the ugliness and the brokenness of the world, but I'm going to live it in a way that is without any error. I'm going to live it in a way that is constantly loving. I'm going to live it in a way that is beautiful and pure and right, so that I can come to you and say to you, if you give me this, I'll give you this." This is my wife's engagement ring. I'm exceptionally nervous carrying this around today. For those of you who know me and my tendency to lose things, you know why I'm exceptionally nervous carrying this around today. It's the single most valuable thing I own without driving a vehicle into the building. You see, it's significant not just that Christ died. It's significant that Christ lived. Because when Christ comes to you, he doesn't just come to you and say, "Listen, I gave my life so that you could be forgiven." He says, "I lived my life so that you could be credited with it." Christmas is not a day that we celebrate because it's the birth of someone who will eventually die for us. Christmas is a day that we celebrate because it's the first day of the life for which we will be credited. And Isaiah knew that there was going to be one who would come, who would live a life that is beautiful and pure. And that he would come to us and he would say to us, "If you will give me that, I will give you this. If you will give me all of the brokenness and all of the ugliness," which is not just in our worst moments, but in our best. "If you will give me that, I will give you this." And if you're like me, you think to yourself, why? Why in the world would you do that? Why? I think one of the greatest steps of faith for every single one of us as it pertains to God is to actually believe him that he is not like you. That he is not like me. If you will give me that, I will give you this. And for some of us, this is a struggle. It's a struggle because we struggle to believe that he would be that good. It's a struggle because we struggle to believe that he would love us that much. For some of you, you've been journeying with us here at Hoboken Grace for quite some time, but you still struggle to actually trust him that he cares about you that way. And there's something inside of you that says that you have to prove that you're worth it. There's something inside of you that says that you have to prove that you're valuable. And I don't know what it is about us, but there's something inside of us that's constantly trying to prove that we're valuable. There's something inside of us that wants for that to be worth something. There's something inside of us that wants to live in a way that we could actually do this. One of the greatest questions that we have to answer is this. Do you want to continue to try to prove that you're valuable? Or do you want to be loved? You can keep trying to make that better. You can try next year to bring better rags, cleaner. But you'll never be able to live this. And you don't have to. The light at the end of the tunnel for Isaiah was not that eventually they would get there. The light at the end of the tunnel was Christmas. That one day someone would live it and then give it to you. And there's something intriguing that happens when it comes to value in relationship. Because I know for some of us, you look at that and you say, well, then what does it even matter what I do? What does it even matter how I try? There's something amazing that happens to value when you step into a relationship. I want to show you a picture. Do you guys have that picture of the artwork that Caden did? This is some artwork that my 4-year-old Caden did recently. My wife loves this picture because this is me in the middle, right? It's an excellent artwork. And then that's Caden up in the corner. I'm married to an Ecuadorian. My wife loves this artwork because it's very clear that Caden believes that he's the dark one and I'm the yellow one. So apparently he's aware of our skin color differences. There's something amazing that happens in terms of value when you step into a relationship. You see, if I were to hand this to you today, there's a good chance that it wouldn't make it out the door before it found its way into a trash can. There's nothing valuable about this. There's nothing that makes this any more valuable than this. Except the fact that it was done by my son. You see, relationship changes everything in terms of value. And as we walk this life, you can continue to try in some way, shape, or form to prove that you're valuable, or you can be loved. And when you are loved, all of a sudden, those things that were very invaluable before become unbelievably valuable. Why? Because you are his. And you wouldn't believe what he can do with the artwork of his children. This morning, I want to leave you with a question. Are you his? This Christmas, do you want to prove your value? Or will you simply be loved? For those of you who have been struggling to accept his love, I hope that this will be the day that you finally say yes. For those of you who are looking for your value and significance somewhere else, I hope that this will be the day in which you finally say yes. And it's as simple as bowing your head where you are. And from your heart to his heart, just simply saying, I understand the best of what I have. It's just that. I want to be yours. And then for those of you who would say, yes, I am his, I hope that you'll sit with that today for just a moment. I hope that the beauty and significance of it, the beauty and significance of Christmas, the first day of the life for which you will be credited, will overwhelm you. And I hope that, as Paul says, as you move into this next year, that you will forget what is behind and that you will press forward to create the artwork with your life for which you've been created. Not to prove that you are valuable, but to create that artwork for the one to whom you belong, the one that you love. That's what Christmas is all about. Merry Christmas. Merry Christmas. Will you pray with me? Father, you are the light in the darkness. There is no other. We don't add to that light. We don't have another option. You are the light. And as you came that Christmas morning to live a life that would be full of love, to live a life that you would exchange for ours, you brought that light to every single one of us. And so, Father, I pray for those who are here who are celebrating this past year and the beauty of it. I pray that they would celebrate that and its value, not because of how it adds to who they are, but that they would celebrate it as a gift of love to you. I pray for those who are walking through this moment and looking back and realizing that, man, even the best of what I have to offer is just rags. I pray that rather than justifying or comparing, that they would look to Christmas. That they would be overwhelmed by your love and grace. Father, this Christmas, and for all to come, we are yours. In Jesus' name, amen.